This is exactly right.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How much TikTok time do you think is okay for you to spend? Do you actually ever start to feel a certain way that doesn't feel good? Because a lot of times the kids will be like, oh yeah, I do know. Like there's a time when I finally like just, I don't want to do it anymore. So if you can engage in a way where they don't have to be defensive, when we don't come at it as a, we're going to try to control you, you just get so much more and you create opportunities for self-awareness as well. Hello, Parent Footprint listeners, and welcome to our April bonus episode of Sitting Down with Dr. Dan. Today, I'm with Phil, our audio engineer, and we are going to answer your listeners' questions and talk about parenting trends and news. As you all know, every month, we listen to your questions, we read your questions, and we answer your questions that you submit to us on Facebook, X, Instagram, or many of you email podcast@drdanpeters.com. Looking forward to it. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Dr. Dan. Welcome to spring.
We are here. We are in it.
We are here. I don't know what the pollen count is like on the West Coast, but...
pretty high out there.
Pretty high out here, but that has not stopped me from getting outside and enjoying the fresh air and sunshine.
Excellent. Thank goodness for allergy medication.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And speaking of spring, our inbox is literally springing forth with new questions.
Ooh, that's so good. That's good. I like how you did that.
It's something like that. That's a little dad humor.
Yep.
All right. Question number one comes from email. Greetings from the Midwest, and thank you for all the amazing advice you provide for so many like myself. I know imaginative play is essential for a child's development, but I have a question about repetitive games that is a bit unusual. I hope you can provide some perspective, reassurance, and guidance. My 5-year-old daughter's preferred games consist of toys or herself becoming captured or trapped and put in a cage. Often, the next part of the game doesn't include an escape or rescue to free herself or toys. They just stay trapped. She will incorporate the trap capture game into seemingly unrelated imaginative games. For example, when we play with bathtub toys, they become caught by pirates or fishermen to be placed in the shower caddy and not allowed to escape. When we play with costumes, she is a unicorn, but she wants to be captured and asks to sit in our infant son's playpen and then makes believe she is part of a show where people pay to see the trapped unicorn. She is a very outgoing, smart, kind, and is a very positive person. She watches age-appropriate shows, and there is no reason for me to suspect any trauma or concern that she is processing something. I've asked her why she enjoys playing trapped games, and she replies that it is just fun for her. Hmm. Is this a healthy way for her to play? Should we be discouraging or respecting her play choices? What behavior would indicate that she is dealing with something else through her play? P.S. Thanks in advance for all you do. I started listening to your podcast when I was on maternity leave through a recommendation on my other favorite podcast with Georgia and Karen, So maybe it's my true crime background that's gotten me worked up about my daughter's pretend games. Thanks for reading this, M from Minnesota.
Hello, Murderino.
Yes. Always welcome here.
What a great, rich question.
Yeah.
Great, rich question. So your child sounds like she's highly imaginative and highly creative. I can understand why you're asking the question and also understand why there would be a little tinge of parental concern. I appreciate you adding that you don't suspect or see any signs of any trauma or difficulty with the judgment. She sounds outgoing. She sounds connected, engaged in her life. So a few thoughts. Short answer is most of the time, play themes pass, and it's a child using their imagination and figuring something out. And some kids can be more repetitive and more focused on one or two themes than others. Like this child. And it is actually fascinating that it goes across, like she brings it into all the different areas of her life. So this is some theme that she's working through right now. So a few thoughts. What we think about is if your child is showing other signs of distress or a change in behavior, then it's good to talk to someone. It's good to, especially with an imaginative younger child, play therapy is really helpful to help with a seasoned practitioner to help a child work through a play theme and resolve or unblock anything that's blocking. But in this case, what I'm saying right now is you just let it unfold. And I wouldn't control the play. Every once in a while, you can ask questions about the play, but I don't believe she should be discouraged. I think she should just be allowed to play. And I'm going to throw one more curveball at you, which is not the traditional response. And that is that there are those that do believe that souls are cycled through in different lifetimes and different incarnations come through as young children working through sometimes something that happened in a different life. And a lot of times kids tend to have memories of these up until age 5 or 6, and then it goes away. And so you're in that time period. So I'm giving a little left field metaphysical different approach to be totally holistic about the possibilities here. And Phil's shaking his head. He's smiling.
I'm yeah. grinning ear yeah. from yeah. ear because this is right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And I think you summarized it just wonderfully. And so I think the theme of your advice overall is keep an open mind and look out for any signs that your child might be in distress. And then if you even sense that just a little bit, because we should always go with our gut, a play therapy session is such a beautiful idea because it's play with a trained professional that knows the nuances of what comes through during play. So should you get to the point of being a little bit more concerned, you have this great safety net. But until then, be open-minded and just see where it goes. And
Yeah. It makes me think of the saying that I use from time to time. A problem's not a problem unless it's a problem. And so then we're always asking ourselves, well, how do we know when it's a problem? Well, we know it's a problem when it interferes with life and something just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
And it's totally normal to have parent concern, parent worry. And particularly if you're a murderino, you get to think about lots of things that happen out there that can keep us up at night. So I would say you're asking the right questions, you're thinking about the right things, and right now it sounds like you have a highly creative child working something out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great that you're tapped in, though.
Yes.
You have the skills and instinct to be able to track this. So fear not. All right. What a great question. And what a great answer. I'm going to be thinking about that all day, Dr. Dan. Okay. Another email that we received. Hello, friends. Wondering if you have advice on how to respond to a teenager talking very negatively about appearances, especially right before they have to go to school. I want to affirm how he feels and give reassurance, but not feed into the self-deprecating cycle that often happens. For context, he does have some scarring on his face from a car accident a couple of years ago that is noticeable. Additionally, his ADHD and other mental health challenges seem to feed into a sense of body dysmorphia. While he is very thin and strong, he can become fixated on his face using terms like ugly, fat, and other negative descriptions. How can I affirm my teenager without invalidating his feelings while offering support and encouragement during and after these meltdowns? All the best, Jay.
Yeah, Jay, well said. Man, we have a highly articulate...
We really do.
...group of community members. It's awesome. Do. So you just summarized this situation for so many listeners. Now, as we all know, that the teenage years are probably among the most self-conscious years, where we walk around feeling, for many, that there is a floodlight, a huge floodlight upon us. Everyone's looking and pointing out and noticing every single detail, a blemish that is not perfect. And that was those of us before social media. Now there's social media, which just makes it all probably 100 times worse. So you've really summed up this balance, this dance of needing to validate while not also playing into it. And that is a really tough dance. I think to acknowledge that he's not feeling good about himself and that you hear it, and to engage in a way that says that you respect and understand how he feels that way. You don't see him that way. Now, remember, moms and dads, and particularly loving moms, you just, like teenagers, you don't have the credibility because, like, you're just my mom. Of course you're going to say something, feel like that. So we got to like say it very sparingly and lightly, because it does matter, but we don't want it to be just discarded. The more credibility comes with listening and valuing and honoring your child's experience. And then I would get into a little, education about, so many people your age feel this way and generally feel that everyone's looking at them, and sometimes they aren't, sometimes they're not. I'm wondering if we can find a way for you to be a supporter to yourself as opposed to be someone who's picking on you. Because if you feel you have other people looking at you and making comments, you don't need to add to that. So one thing I'm thinking about is some way of affirming oneself. I don't look like I like to, but it's not as bad as I think. Something, because with dysmorphia, so for everyone listening, like, dysmorphia is a clinical term, but it's also used very commonly now in our language as dissatisfaction with oneself. But body dysmorphia is a clinical term for really having distress. Dysmorphia goes into depression about the way one looks. And if one is at a place that is extreme, that is when it helps to get professional counseling, to have this other non-parent person who has some cred to help a person with how they view themselves and understand a little bit more about why they're viewing themselves in such a way. We know kids who are either identifying as non-binary or are transgender or leaning towards that experience a lot of body dysmorphia because they truly are distressed with the body that they are occupying or the gender that they are occupying. So I'm not saying that is going on here. That's just by way of explanation. I also like in these situations to have a conversation about, okay, what would you like to be different? And let's develop a plan, a healthy plan. So for example, maybe it's a visit to the dermatologist. So there's so many kids with acne, you know, and with the scarring, and I know this is again different. If it's I'm too heavy or I'm too thin, okay, is it do we want to talk about food choices? Do we want to talk about exercise? Do we want to, like, there's ways that we want to empower our kids to take action in healthy ways. Again, I'm using the word healthy, not body restriction ways. And also, we have to find a way to hit the narrative, that self-narrative, because again, the negative self-narrative contributes to the dysmorphia and it contributes to depressive thinking. So teenagers are multifaceted. Teenagers are very complex. And sometimes it really is about finding that mentor or that guide who they can have this honest conversation and say many of the things that you would say, but they get listened to by someone else who's not a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm going to start from there and work back. So based on the email that you sent in, it sounds like your son has some challenges, right? And so I'm going to take a wild guess, and I could be wildly off, but already may have a therapist. And I bring this up because I was with my daughter, seeing her doctor just this week, and we were talking about therapy and some stuff going on with her. And she's a teenager, and so her doctor was able to say to her, well, you know, you're seeing a therapist, and that's great, but you need to decide, you know, where your focus needs to be. What is causing you the most discomfort right now? What is your primary challenge? Because usually that's the one that kind of seeps into other areas. And you can absolutely say to your counselor, hey, this is what I want to focus on, and this is my goal to feel this way. And then you're off to the races. And that is, you know, that was just such beautiful advice that we just received, that sometimes you don't even, it doesn't even cross your mind, the simple things. Mm-hmm. My daughter is, she's tall and she's athletic, but she has, as every teenage girl has, you know, definitely self-image issues, both my kids. And while not getting too deeply into it, I will often, as Dr. Dan mentioned, you know, say, try to practice kindness to yourself. And always remember, you know, feelings are not facts. Mm-hmm. But it's, at the same time, absolutely understand what you are expressing to me. I hear what you're saying, and I get it. Mm-hmm. Because we have all been there where there's been something that we are just not happy about our appearance with. And then I went on to say, you might feel like people are looking at you or being like, oh gosh, you know, she's overweight, or like, look at her acne or anything like that. But ask yourself the question, in those scenarios where you encounter all different kinds of people throughout your day at school, are you looking at these people and judging them? Probably not. In fact, knowing my girls, they aren't. And odds are, most of the people that you're coming across in your day-to-day in school are experiencing very similar feelings, and they are more concerned about themselves and how everyone they're passing by is viewing them to notice you have a zit forming on your cheek, or that, you know, you are wearing a sweater with a stain on it. They are probably more concerned about how everyone else is viewing them. So try to,
definitely.
You know, that's something to definitely keep in mind too. And I know that has brought some comfort. You know, sometimes any trick in the book doesn't work because teenagers are complicated, and that's that. But these are all strategies that can at least help limit that sense of just discomfort.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It makes me think of a quote my dad would always say, which was, he was quoting this quote that says something like, don't worry about what other people are thinking about you because they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're focused on themselves most of the time. Yeah.
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 Yeah. The truth.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
We have a third email in two parts. So I don't know if you want me to read part one and we address part one and then read part two and address part two. What do you think?
Sure. Let's do that. And then we can time together if we need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Through the wonders of studio magic.
Yes.
All right. Part one. Okay. Third email, both from JT. I'm wondering how to navigate my 13-year-old son constantly having his door closed. I've never had a strict boundary for this, but now that I know better, I'm wondering how can I encourage him to keep his door cracked just enough that he's not completely isolated, but enough that he feels like he's getting privacy to decompress. I've moved his PlayStation to the living room to help with this, but he does have a TV in his room. Thank you so much for making time to answer parent questions. Your guidance has helped my single parent journey immensely. My family and I are grateful. Best, Jay.
Well, thank you, Jay. That's really good to hear. Appreciate that. So I want to normalize the door close in the teenage years. And it's very common and very typical. And I do think that privacy is important, and many kids don't feel they have privacy if they're forced to have a door ajar and they don't want it to be ajar. And then it sort of negates the idea. It kind of, so they're quote, having alone time, or I would say, quote, isolating, but they don't, it diminishes that they are for them if they're forced to have a door open. They don't get the benefit of that alone time, that cocooning time. So I actually like what you've done about PlayStation in the main area, because it's a way for him to come out and be with you. I also want to point out that in these situations, it's almost always uncomfortable for parent, because we start to assume our kids are depressed, our kids, they're going through stuff. And some of the time that's definitely true. But also a lot of the time they're just doing typical teenager, I want alone time, I don't want to be looked at, I don't want to be talked to, I just want my own space. And these teenagers do find comfort knowing you're in the other room. So I guess where I was going with that is that we have to ask ourselves, is this about them or is this about us? We feel nervous if we don't have our kids, or can't look in the room whenever we want to look in the room, because often the kids are feeling connected enough with your energetic presence. So I think it's not about having the door slightly open. I think it's about having that quiet connection, meaning you're in the room or you're in the house and he's playing the video game or meals, or it's like, it's more about quality over quantity generally in the teenage years. And the vast majority of the time they reemerge once they come out of the cocoon and are sort of maturing and feeling more comfortable with themselves. So this is one that I'm suggesting not to worry about, and I'm liking how you're handling it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Again,
you're in I have, you're in it right now.
I am in the thick of it. Absolutely. And I will say it was a challenging transition as a parent, because we went from spending probably more time than most parents in their teens spend together, like binge watching TV and always together when they are here, to that suddenly diminishing and spending more time in the room, either reading homework or whatever, doing video games. And it was, that was an adjustment, because I felt, honestly, that I felt this as we do, I think, as we hit these successive chapters in our parenting journey, is this sense of loss. And it's, you know, loss for what your experience had been as a parent in that relationship and what that dynamic was. And then it's also a little bit of a loss of, kind of control. You don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And when previously you had kind of a better finger on the pulse of that. But at the end of the day, it is okay. And they do come out of their caves, as has been my experience. And I'm finding that the time that we are spending together is quality time. And to make sure that we as parents are creating opportunities for that quality time and that bonding in a way that doesn't feel forced and does feel organic. And yes. I think as long as you take that approach, as Dr. Dan has suggested, and try the door shut, and I think it will work out okay. You may have different rules for different scenarios. We haven't encountered this yet, but I can guarantee you, if we have boys coming over to spend some time with them, that door will not be shut.
That's the different scenarios. Yes. That's fair. That's fair. Yep. So I agree. And being on the other side of this with now young adults, they all reemerged. They all reemerged, and each of the kids did it a little differently in their own way. But I can totally relate to the jarring, like, you don't, this is one where you don't get the memo last time for everything. Like, you don't know when all of a sudden it goes from them wanting to hang out with you to doors shut, not wanting to talk. It just happens. But they reemerge.
Yeah. And one final thought. Take their alone time.
Yes.
As an opportunity for yourself to practice some self-care.
Yes. Yes. It's a break. It's actually often a much needed break.
Okay. Part two. I have a couple more questions for you, which also circle back to my first email wondering about closed doors. A reason why my teen is always in his room with the lights off or dim is for sensory needs, but he's mainly on his phone watching TikTok. So I wonder, how can I make the rest of the home more enticing to be in? As I've said, I've brought out his PlayStation to the living room, which has helped, and we like to play card games like Uno. What are some hobbies or activities we could do together at home? What about making a living space more engaging and affirming for a teen? Thanks for the support, JT.
Oh, that is a totally related part two question. Yeah, that's so well thought out.
That was brilliant. Well done, JT.
Yes. So the first thing, so I love that you're thinking about this, and that you pointed out the sensory break. So being in a dark room, first of all, lots of teenagers do like to be in dark room and not have that sensory overload. You know, some even paint their walls very dark as well. So that's really important for that sensory break. And sometimes it literally is just to also get away from the family, depending on what the family dynamic is, just to like get away and have some just peace and quiet. However, I think your question, the first things I'm thinking is your question of how to create a friendly, inviting teenage living space would actually be to have that conversation with him and really talk about what's going on. Say that you completely respect him wanting to be alone. You totally respect and understand the need for a sensory, turning down the volume on all the sensory information coming in. And you want to make sure that you grow with him and that you want the house also to feel welcoming, so he can spend some time out of his room. And you're wondering, what are some aesthetics or anything that he would suggest that would make the room more inviting? I'm saying now the living area, more inviting or less stimulating from a sensory perspective. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. And we are often surprised when we actually include our kids in the conversations we're having about them and thinking we have to figure out all of this on our own, particularly when they're at this age. And then the second part of that is talking about, is there anything that you, I would like to come up with some ideas of things that every once in a while we can do together, while totally understanding your need for alone time. Is there any show that we could watch? Is there, and this is what I actually had to do with our son, which took a lot for me because I was very much against the first person shooter games. And I held out as long as I could. And we had debates and debates and debates and debates. And it finally did penetrate our house. And there was a lot of time playing with him playing that and playing with his friends online. And I realized that the number one way that I could have time with him was to sit with him and learn about his games. And then he wanted me to play and then got a kick out of how I didn't even know how to like walk and point a gun and shoot it and all of the other things that they do in a millisecond. But it actually became a way of me joining him as opposed to judging, which I was doing, about how I felt about it. Mm-hmm. Another thing was a time when he was binge watching, and this was during the summer because I know he was staying up later and we were trying to be okay with it, binge watching Lost. Mm-hmm. And after realizing that telling him not to do that or asking him to reflect on that and think about sleep and like, well, this isn't working. So then I said, hey, can I watch some with you? And of course, I got totally hooked and then understood why, as Netflix was changing everything. So you like don't even have time to stop it before the next one comes on. And then all of a sudden you're hooked again. So that was a way where I joined him as opposed to tried to pull him out of his stuff that he wasn't really interested in doing with us. So yeah. I think there's a couple ways to do it, but I would really ask your son what he thinks about all this.
Yeah, absolutely. One thought to consider is you mentioned he will be on TikTok, you know, scrolling on his phone in his room. Do you think that plays into his amount of time he spends in the room because he feels like he can't do that out in the main area the reason that maybe you will suggest, why don't you do something other than scrolling on your phone, which is a totally normal parent suggestion and a totally normal teen reaction. And this is a whole extra layer of challenge that we have to deal with, but that could be part of it. And that might come up in this conversation. And look, I really have not a lot of love for TikTok and the scrolling social media apps out there, but I do recognize, okay, this is part of their world and what they do. And so, you know, rather than kind of pointing out like, you've been on your phone for this long, or can you put your phone down? We're trying to do this together. Again, I've made that a conversation, and I brought to my daughter's attention that, hey, I don't know if you realize this, you can track how much time you're spending doing various things on your phone. And it caught my attention the other day that last Friday you spent 11 hours on TikTok, and she was just floored. She didn't get defensive. I didn't say in a way that was, in any way accusatory. And she took it upon herself to set up her own kind of time restrictions in the screen time. And she still does stuff on her phone, but it is, she'll read stuff or do Webtoon. So that could become part of this conversation.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to get off track, but if it is partially due to he wants to be able to spend some time on his phone decompressing, which we all get, then see if that can be incorporated into this plan and discussion.
I really like how you did that. And it makes me also want to offer the importance of these kind of conversations, which is not accusatory, which is, hey, I'm just wondering how much TikTok time do you think is okay for you to spend? Like, do you have a number in your head? And how do you track it? And what would be too much? And do you actually ever start to feel a certain way that doesn't feel good if you spend a certain amount of time on TikTok? Because a lot of times the kids will be like, oh yeah, I do know. Like, there's a time when I finally I don't want to do it anymore. Yeah. So if you can engage in a way where they don't have to be defensive, they can actually get really honest with themselves and get honest with you and say like, yeah, I find myself like doing it much more than I want. And so I feel it's more when we don't come at it as a, we're going to try to control you, you just get so much more and you create opportunities for self-awareness as well.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And the one final thought, my wife, the girl's stepmom has managed to find a way of just to incorporate the screens into time that we spend together. And she is like a genius at finding these hilarious videos on Instagram Reels. Mm. And she'll share them with the girls while we're sitting there on the couch. And so while they may be on their screens, because we do give them that opportunity to have that screen time, they're still connected. Mm. And we're sharing a laugh or we're just heard about a show that's coming out and sharing that. So there are ways to really kind of be creative and lock in a way that will resonate with your child.
Right. I like that. That is genius. And I know at our kids' age, being a little older, they send us funny TikToks, and it's a way we laugh with each other, because they're usually like related to our family in some way or some interesting idea that we've been talking about. And there's a solution because everything's on TikTok. So yeah, there are ways to bring it in as opposed to repel it.
Yes. Yes. And I think given all of this, you will find that happy balance where you feel okay with your son having the alone time in the room. And he will feel okay having his time, you know, where you are directly in each other's presence.
Yes. Thank you, JT.
Thank you, JT. These questions, man, I'm always so impressed with the questions that come through. Okay. Dr. Dan, this is the final question. Okay. Last question is via a direct message. What is a man? And this is flowing. You're going to get a kick. Last question is via a direct message. What is hashtag teacher talk, Dr. Dan? Do parents need to follow this hashtag? Now, there's a footnote. Laura, our producer, did a little bit of research for this question for Dr. Dan, including checking out the hashtag and three articles, all of which are linked in our show notes. So there's a TikTok hashtag teacher talk, and there will be the link. I won't read that out. There's a Wired article, The Tricky Ethics of Being a Teacher on TikTok, and then a few more articles, which I will not list by name, so you can have some time to weigh in on this, Dr. Dan, but all these will, of course, be in our show notes.
Yes.
Teacher talk.
Yeah, teacher talk. So I had to do a little investigation myself, thanks to Laura's guidance, and so here's what we've learned. The teacher talk themed TikTok videos have 96.1 billion views. So, wow. Okay. So who knew? So this is a thing. So what is this stuff? So basically, this is where teachers do a lot of different things. They
you know
share,
what I'm doing when we get off this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You're going right on. You're going right on. Well, I was watching some of them. They're actually pretty good. So it's everything. So there's humor. There's like, they're humor and they're just sharing, you know, sort of anonymous about kids, like things that your kids say about, or their students say about what happened to their homework, or funny questions that they ask. There is a lot of sharing advice, teacher to teacher, sharing creative ideas. There is some venting that happens. It is about a sense of community. But and with the venting, like sometimes these are teachers who are feeling really isolated, feeling very overwhelmed, the stresses of school since COVID and after, that they actually feel like they're not alone, and it can actually create some some movements about trying to create some change at a larger level. And it also is interesting a way that they connect with other students, because students actually follow their posts and they're able to sort of share their humor and share more of themselves than just being in the classroom. Now, there have been a few situations where teachers have gotten in trouble because they've crossed over the line. Whether the content was seen as inappropriate, or they're talking about students in a way that is not anonymous and they don't have the student's permission. So that stuff is not okay. But I would say, in terms of the big picture, do you as a parent need to be aware of it? Do you need to be worried about it? Do you need to follow it? I don't think so. Like, unless you want to, you have a specific teacher that you want to learn more about your child's teacher, or your child says, oh yeah, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so has some funny, posts some funny videos. But all in all, I think you have enough things to think about, and having to follow TikTok teacher hashtags, I am not recommending you adding that to your plate.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's something that you feel curious about, check it out. But if you think it is something that you have to put on your, you know, parenting essential checklist, I would say that teacher talk probably shouldn't make it on that checklist, or anything talk, really.
Yeah. 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 But thank you for bringing it to our attention and to my attention, because now I am aware of this. And I got to say, it's like TikTok, social media, it's so mixed, because there are, of course, we talk about a lot of the downsides, whether you get sucked in or it causes people to feel bad about themselves and judge themselves. But these are also tools where people share knowledge and gain a sense of community with what they're experiencing. And we know that teachers are just, it's a heroic job. That's a very difficult job, and that they can be sharing their experiences and their ideas with other teachers. Yeah. I see that as a positive thing.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. And well, that's it. That was our last question.
That was it. Thank you, everyone. We love your questions. We listen to them all the time. Mm. We read them, we listen to them, we talk about them. Thank you for listening to our regular weekly show, Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. And you know, those episodes drop every Thursday. And our new bonus episodes drop the last Tuesday of each month, all in your regular feed. You can follow us. You can continue to follow us at Parent Footprint Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and on X at Dr. Dan Peters. You can also learn more at www.drdanpeters.com and exactlyright.com. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing on everywhere you get your podcasts.
And telling your friends.
Yes. Apple, Spotify. Tell your friends, tell your friends, tell your friends. We love word of mouth. That's how we get just the amazing people that you guys bring. So thank you again, Phil. Another
thank
one.
You, Dr. Dan.
Fun as always.
Always.
And you know what I'm going to say, guys. Try to be that person you want your child to become, and ask yourself the guiding question: what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Mountain Spring High, composed and performed by Gabriel Lewis. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast, and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.